funny. And suddenly, I felt incredibly plain standing outside this magical stall full of interesting jewelry and a gypsy-like girl who made it by hand. I was wearing a green t-shirt that said New York on it, even though I had never been there, and jeans that were ripped at the knees when my mom brought them home from American Eagle. Looking at Nat's sandals and the toe rings decorating her toes, I tucked my feet under the tablecloth so she couldn't see my unpainted toenails. I decided to get my mom a midnight blue ring with a black band. When I handed it to Nat, she smiled and picked up the calculator again. "Homeschooling didn't help me with my math skills," she said after two attempts at figuring out the tax. "Wait, do I even need to add tax?" "I have no idea," I shrugged. She was homeschooled too. It made her even cooler to me. "You know what?" She grabbed a little green bag from below the table and opened it. "You're my first paying customer of the day, so no tax for you." I thanked her as she tucked my pieces into the bottom of the bag and filled the empty space with white tissue paper. "I hope you like the jewelry, and if you don't, just pretend you do." Nat lifted the calculator to show me the price, $25. "I thought it was 24. You were right about the homeschooling not helping your math." I hoped that she would know I was joking, but I couldn't remember the last time I'd made a joke to someone who wasn't part of my family, or Laurie. Fortunately, she caught on just fine and smiled. I wondered how old she was. How did she already have a business, and I didn't even think I was going to know what I wanted to do with my life when I turned 18. Joe knew what she wanted to do right after graduation. So did Meg. Amy probably even knew at 12. Nat knew and was out selling her jewelry at the festival. I glanced over at my sisters again to make sure they were still nearby and saw a group of girls my age approaching the booth. "Thanks again." I handed Nat two 20s from my pocket, and she pulled a 5 and a 1 out of a brown leather bag and waved bye to me. When I walked up to Meg, Joe, and Laurie, Joe was leaning against Laurie's back, and he was taking a picture of the top of their heads. I didn't ask why. They started doing that a few weeks ago. They even started taking pictures of all the food I made at home, and people on social media would comment that they wanted it or about how good it looked. Amy kept telling me that I should post videos of myself making food on some website she watches, but I didn't see where the time or courage would come from. Between my dad being home and my Aunt Hannah coming over every other day to eat, to ask for gas money, or to sit on the porch with my mom while she had a drink or two, it was a lot. I also had schoolwork to do. I was so close to finishing my credits for 9th grade. I couldn't wait to be in 11th, and I definitely couldn't wait to turn 16. Joe said 16 was transformative, and I saw something change in her when she turned 16. Meg, too. Just as I was thinking that 18 and 19 changed Meg so much, too, she wrapped her arm through mine. "What did you get, babe?" She looked down at the bag in my hand. As we walked, Meg tried on the jewelry. She held her hand up and spread her fingers. I remember the sun shining through each one. "These are fucking cool, Beth. How many did she have?" Meg reached past Laurie to Joe, who was just behind him. "Ooh," Joe said admiringly. "We should go back there before we leave tonight," Meg offered. I nodded, sort of wanting to go back to the jewelry stand too. I should have gotten Aunt Hannah a necklace, maybe a black and amethyst layered one to wear to spirits. The bar practically glowed moody dark colors that I associated with the Crescent City. My Aunt Hannah seemed to almost never work anymore, but I thought maybe it just felt that way because she was coming over to the house so much more.
"Okay, so what's the plan? Do we want more music or more food or what? We can grab a spot on the grass in front of Jackson Square where we came in and eat there. There's going to be fireworks over the river tonight."
Laurie pointed behind me toward the Mississippi River, where rainbow colors would burst and bloom over our heads. "What time is it now?" Joe asked, and instead of waiting for anyone to answer, she raised Laurie's wrist and checked his watch. "It's 7 now, so we have about an hour of sunlight left." We agreed to find a place on the grass and took turns getting food. A band was going to be playing at 8 anyway, then the fireworks were scheduled for 9. I hoped that the grass wouldn't be too crowded by the time the show started. And when I looked around the festival, it seemed to have changed a little since we arrived. In just over an hour, there were fewer kids and more plastic cups full of alcohol in the hands of people swaying just a little more than before. The voices of said people were louder, too, and I suspected that the higher the moon rose, the rowdier the people would get. The moon made me think of the jewelry girl, and I wondered if the moon made her bloom, too.
37. Meg. My ass hurt from sitting on the ground, even on top of the two blankets Lori bought from a vendor. The ground was hard, and the spot we chose to sit down on was more dirt than grass, but I was having a good time. Joe and Lori had obviously agreed to date each other, and he was everywhere she was. When she was eating truffle fries with a fork, his eyes followed up and down, and when she dropped one, he caught it with a napkin. I thought maybe his obsession was with the fries, because, girl, were they good. But then he stuck the flake-covered fry between her lips, and she gave him a sheepish grin, and that grin widened as he moved a little closer to her. His legs were so long that they stuck out past hers, and his foot almost touched Beth's flip-flops. She was lying on her back, staring at the sky. I didn't want to bother her. I knew the crowd size had to be intimidating to her. She, unlike me, hadn't been through the madness that was Sephora on a Black Friday near an army post. I figured that she needed the break. "Is that Belle Gardner?" Joe asked, her mouth full of potato chunks. She grabbed a napkin and wiped her chin and lips. I looked across the grass, scanning the crowd for Belle, and found her after only a few seconds. She was wearing cut-off shorts with rips in them, flip-flops, and a dark orange tank top with a shawl over her shoulders. A shawl, really. "Go say hi," Beth teased from the grass. I leaned over her and she closed her eyes, smiling. "Should I?" I turned to Joe. "Hell no, no way. She was a total dick the last time she saw you and never even apologized. Don't even give her the satisfaction, Meg." Beth added that I should only talk to Belle if she approached us. I wiped off my dress and straightened the ribbon choker around my neck. I tugged on one of the satin strings to even the two ends out. I ran my hands over the top of my hair. This heat hated my hair. The humidity in the New Orleans area was a good conversation starter for every week from April to August. When I first started working for Mrs. King, I complained about the frizz causing humidity, and she laughed and said, over a glass of Pinot Noir, "Oh, wait until August. This is nothing." And boy, was she right. But the weekend of the French Quarter Festival was only April, and my hair was already curling at the scalp. I had spent almost an hour pulling a flat iron through sections of my dark hair. Joe always hated the smell of heated hair, but I would burn candles of it. I pulled a little bit of my hair over both my shoulders and unsnapped my bag to get out a gloss for my lips. Beth was back to staring at the sky, and Joe was looking at Lori's phone screen with him. I had the late realization that Amy would have been better to drag along to this type of festival than Beth was. Not only because Beth hated crowds, but also because Amy would have gone along with anything I wanted to do. I could have convinced her to do a lap around with me, and she would have gone up to Belle and her friends right beside me. Granted, it would have been lame as hell to have my 12-year-old sister on my back, but Beth would find a way to avoid the confrontation altogether. I would go ahead and say that Beth was the smartest, most thoughtful of us spring girls. The sun was starting to set, and the grass area in front of Jackson Square was getting more and more crowded as the light disappeared. Out of all the, I don't know, 1,000 people on the grass, we got mushed up against a group who looked to be my age at first glance. I scanned over them but didn't recognize anyone except one guy with white hair grown just a little past his ears. I couldn't remember where I knew him from and wasn't about to ask, so I just turned to Joe and made conversation. "What are you two talking about?" I asked Joe and Lori. She laughed and shoved his cell phone to me. "Amy, I read the messages on the screen and looked up at Joe and Lori. Lori looked a little uncomfortable, and Joe was smiling at me. "Bad timing," she joked. "It's not really funny, Joe." I took the phone and erased the messages. I looked up at Lori when Joe acted like she didn't understand why it wasn't comical to show Lori what Amy had sent her. "What?" Joe's heart-shaped face tilted sideways, and her lips pouted out. Joe looked like a girl who would have been a model in the 90s, with full natural lips and thick eyebrows. Her legs were long and she walked like a pigeon on them, but had charm coming out of her ears. Understated beauty, a model for Calvin Klein or Guess. "Lori, cover your ears," I said. He looked at Joe and didn't cover his ears. "He can listen. It's just her period. It's not that big of a deal." Joe leaned forward and crossed her legs under her body. She stuck her flip-flops under the balls of her ankle bones so they wouldn't touch the ground. "Just a period? Joe." I lowered my voice when Beth turned her head to listen to us. "Meg, seriously? You're censoring Lori from hearing about menstruation? Half of the world are women, and they have periods, including his mom. Plus, the boys in Europe aren't as sensitive to such a natural thing. Right, Lori?" Joe looked over at him. He didn't seem like this was a conversation that he minded having, but that wasn't the point. "It's fine," Lori assured me. "What's fine?" Beth sat up and dusted the dry grass strands off her back. I filled Beth in on what was happening and saw Joe roll her eyes. "Amy started her period while out with Dad, and she's mortified." "She didn't say she was mortified," Joe added. I held the phone up and tried to read the deleted messages again. I bitterly wondered why Amy would text Joe about starting her period over me or Beth. Joe and Amy could barely stand each other, and I was the one who taught Amy how to curl her hair and put on eyeliner. I gave Amy her first bra when Meredith thought she was too young for one, but Joe was the sister Amy shared that moment with. "She said," I read off the screen, "I'm so embarrassed, Joe. I bled through my pants, had to tie Dad's shirt around my waist. Kill me, please." I popped my eyes out at Joe. "It's just a period, Meg," Joe said. I groaned. I was all for Joe's liberal, free-spirited mantras and everything, but sometimes she passed things off as too unimportant when they deserved more attention. I knew that Joe was writing off Amy getting her monthlies because Joe had that mindset where if you ignore something or are careful not to overreact, society will join in your belief. But Joe was only 16, almost 17, and she had no idea how boys who weren't like Lori acted over a little blood. Not only the boys, the bitchy girls in school were much worse than the boys most of the time. Joe always sort of floated under the radar at school, whereas I was the beacon who couldn't stay under the radar if I fucking tried. I always ended up in the middle of drama, always. Like in eighth grade, when I bled through my gray gym shorts and a group of girls in my class drew angry red scribbles on a pack of oversized pads and stuck them to my desk. "It's not just a period, Joe," I told her again, and hoped she would be able to go through her life always thinking periods weren't a big deal. "Anyway, enough about periods," Joe laughed, and Lori still looked unfazed by our conversation. Beth lay back down on the grass despite the crowd surrounding us, and Joe started talking about her writing and that she'd almost finished a piece she was sending to Vice. I listened to her and Lori bouncing back and forth in conversation, and I pulled out my phone and checked my notifications. I had stopped looking for John's name on the screen a day or two ago. He was in the field, which meant I wouldn't hear from him for days. I swiped up and cleared out a text from Meredith and one from Reader, along with a text from Mrs. King. She needed me to come to her house early to do her hair before some kind of meeting being held there. Mrs. King lived in a world from a television show where she held meetings and events for things I had never heard of. Either way, I needed the hours and always wanted to be a part of her kind of life. I sent her my reply and pulled up Facebook. I scrolled through pictures of my cousins on my dad's side's newest kids and pictures of my old neighbor's dog and her newly born puppies while Joe talked to Lori. I heard bits of it between my scrolling and got the gist of how much it pissed her off that the majority of people associated the French Quarter with booze, beads, and boobs, when the unique culture of the city was so much more than that. Lori made a joke that I didn't hear, and Joe's chin turned up, and she smiled at him so brightly that I almost said something to her. Instead, I turned back to my phone. How was I struggling to keep a relationship, and Joe had a boyfriend? Even though Joe would never let me categorize Lori as her boyfriend, that's basically what he was. He was always sitting on the couch, and I always tripped over his long legs, stretched out all the way to the entertainment center. My dad started to get annoyed when he would try to roll his chair by. It was already a struggle to move the wheels over the rug, let alone with Lori stretched out and asleep on the couch. The Lawrence driver even took Joe to school most days. I wondered how the next year of Joe's life would go. The animated look in her eyes when she talked to him with her hands and the way Lori stared at her lips, maybe reading them, maybe thinking about fucking them, when she spoke to him made the romantic in me weep, but the realist in me prepare for heartbreak. I didn't have the best dating resume, but it was extensive, so I did have experience. I wondered if Joe would end up staying at Fort Cypress if she and Lori made it through the summer and her senior year. Long distance was hard. I knew that for sure. John and I jumped into a long-distance relationship, and look how that was ending up. It had only been a few months since I saw him last, but it felt much longer than that. I knew he was adjusting to his new duty station in North Carolina, but I had hoped my invitation to join him would have come by now. He was contacting me less and less, and I knew what was happening. I just wasn't ready to admit it. Seriously, with every disappointment I felt from the guys around me, from River to even John, I felt my bones wear a little more. I felt a little more seasoned by the world. I knew plenty of women in my life who bounced from one disappointing man to the next, finding their identity in them and wasting away while catering to their husbands. It was especially common in military communities. Mrs. King wasn't like that. She married a law student when she was too young to know what marriage was and stayed with him, supporting him, helping Mr. King become the mogul that he became. At 19, I would have been fine with that. I wanted that more than I wanted to become a makeup artist. I loved makeup, but I really wanted someone to go through life with me. Was that so bad? I knew Joe felt like I was abandoning my womanhood by dreaming of a family and a life full of family vacations, teaching little versions of me and my husband to be decent humans, and spending my holidays in a warm house that would smell like cinnamon and honey and be packed wall to wall with laughter and conversation. I'd spent my life having awkward family events. Meredith and Aunt Hannah always fought, no matter if it was someone's birthday party at a skating rink or Christmas dinner in my Nana's dining room. Once, after Amy pushed Joe into a pool at our Aunt Hannah's apartment building in Texas, Meredith told me that she and Aunt Hannah never got along until they were both in their 20s. But even then, Meredith was always having to bail Aunt Hannah out of the trouble she got herself into, and lately, there was this weird tension between them. So, my sisters and I were different. Each of us was a completely different creature, and I couldn't wait until the day my family would go visit Joe in New York City, and she could show me her big, fancy office with marble desks and the latest Apple computer. I was genuinely excited to see Joe grow up and try to conquer the world. And I would do the same, but my world would just be different from hers. I knew she would understand that someday and end her misjudgment of roles of women. Meg? Joe's voice broke through my thoughts. I blinked at her as I came out of the little fog inside my head. Huh? Do you want a water? We're going to get one. I lifted my hand to shade my eyes from the falling sun. Yeah, please. Beth, do you want a water? I turned to my sister, who was possibly asleep on the dry grass. Joe answered instead. I already asked her. Man, you were out of it. Joe laughed softly. What were you dreaming about? I shook my head. Just about you and I being completely different people, you know? Nothing. I looked at Lori. He was sitting behind her, running his fingers over the feathery tips of her long hair. Mm-hmm, Joe joked, and stood, brushing off her butt and legs. We'll be right back. Don't move, please. Lori followed behind her, and they disappeared into the crowd. I stared into the crowd and heard one of the festival organizers telling people to sit down before the concert began. The group that had been close to us a few minutes ago was even closer now, and Beth was still lying there, decompressing with her eyes closed, so I looked at my phone again. I was scrolling for a few seconds before I realized that I was on Shia's Facebook page. I brushed it off as an impulse due to the months I racked up cyber-watching him. I would just have to break that habit. It would be hard, but I was only torturing myself, and now that we were Facebook friends, it felt even more intrusive for some reason. I could see even more of his life once I approved the friend request he sent me right after my dad came back from Germany. Now I could see his status and other posts he shared. I could also see pictures he was tagged in by Belle Gardner, and I tried my best not to let them make me throw up the strawberry yogurt I had for breakfast basically every morning. Shia's there, I thought I heard a voice say. Damn, I was getting to be a little on the paranoid side. I thought maybe I should have deleted him from my Facebook, but I told myself that would make things awkward since we were supposed to be keeping things civil. We wanted to be in each other's life, though at a distance. No way. Let me see, a girl's voice said right next to my ear. Swear, another girl replied. I looked over, and they both were staring at a cell phone. I couldn't see what they were looking at, so I turned back to my phone. My skin was a little prickly as I continued to listen. It was like I had a sixth sense. Damn, whose tits are those? A man asked. I looked up at him, and he wasn't a man. He was a boy with scruffy brown hair so overgrown it almost covered his eyes, wearing khaki shorts rolled up just above his knee. His boat shoes made me think he was rich, probably from Lakeshore or Lake Vista. He smelled of privilege and Armani cologne. Some chick from... Did we miss anything? Joe's voice drowned out the response, and I turned to her. Paranoia took hold of me. I felt like everyone knew something that I didn't know. It made me itchy, and my heart was starting to pick up its beat. Not really. The music is about to start. I debated whether to mention something to Joe, but when I thought about it, I didn't have anything to say. I would seem insane, completely. Joe handed me a bottle of water, and it soaked my hand. Beth got hers, too, and I settled in my spot on the blanket and stretched my legs out in front of me. My hair was so frizzy I could feel it when I touched it. The humidity was worse than in the morning, and my skin felt sticky and warm. I rubbed the beads of water from the outside of the sweating bottle over my legs spread out in front of me, and the group next to me was still talking about whatever was on that phone. How desperate do you have to be? A girl whose voice I thought I recognized said. I could barely see her because I was sitting down and most of her group were still standing, despite a festival worker's request to sit the hell down. Well, she is a spring girl, and that whole family is nuts. The words hit me straight in the throat and ached all the way down to the pit that was eating away in my stomach. I felt like I was being picked away at with a chisel as the group got more and more rowdy and the comments kept flooding. The one is like being held captive or something. Meg is a whore, and the little one is growing up to be just like her. My body quickly turned to them, but not one of them even noticed. I was torn between knocking one to the ground and hoping for a domino effect or leaving. A masochistic part of me wanted to sit there and just listen to the hateful shit they were saying about me and my sisters so I could obsess over it enough to start to think it was true. My mom said they're getting kicked out of their house because their dad's getting kicked out of the army. Whose voice is that? I knew it for sure. It only took me a few seconds to find Shelly Hunchberg sitting on the grass a few bodies down from me. I felt the flame of rage flickering inside me. "Joe," I said just as the crowd started to cheer over me with the first band coming on stage. Great timing. "Joe," I said louder. Neither she nor Lori heard me. "Josephine," I half shouted, and Lori and Joe both snapped their heads toward me. "What?" I scooted closer to her and explained what was happening, the best I could. Joe's eyes went wild. "So they were looking at those pictures? I'll go over there right now." She was half yelling, but the sound of trumpets was so loud that she might as well have been whispering. I hadn't even thought about the cell phone and what they were looking at on the screen. I think a part of me knew before Joe stood up, and it was why I was feeling paranoid, but the rest of my mind didn't want to go there. "Don't." I reached for Joe's arm and pulled her back down by her wrist. Lori sat up more and was immediately alerted. "Why not? If they're showing those pictures." Joe's cheeks were red and she was talking through her teeth. If they were, who was the source? How did those damn pictures travel from Texas to Louisiana? The internet, that was how. It had to be. My chest felt like it had caved in and smashed my heart as I tried to think clearly. Was it actually happening? Yes, it had to be. They said names. I stood up, not knowing what else to do. I should have just left, but of course I didn't. Joe, Beth, and Lori were on their feet, too. Before I could decide what to do, I heard an unmistakable voice from the group. "And even John Brooke can't stand her. He's trying to break up with her, but she's so desperate." She laughed. "I heard Shia's mom talking about Meredith Spring being a drunk now." Belle Gardner. Her voice dripped honey and stung like a wasp. I thought about the time I was at the pool in sixth grade and saw a wasp cut a honeybee's body in half and fly away with the lower half of its body, leaving its head just sitting there. I thought about how Belle Gardner was a cruel insect of a woman. "What the fuck?" I said when I stepped into the little circle of bodies they had formed. Joe was at my side with Lori and Beth behind her. Belle's eyes didn't go wide. They turned into little slits like a serpent's eyes, and she came floating toward me like a ghost. She moved so slowly, like even if she was surprised to see me there, she wasn't about to show it. I could see a little hint of anxiety over me being there, but it wasn't as obvious as I would have been if caught red-handed talking shit about someone. "Meg." She smiled a slithery grin at me, her eyes going from me to Joe to Beth to Lori and back to me. "Hey." Belle nudged the girl next to her and someone shushed us. "What the fuck, Belle?" Joe's voice barked next to me. "What? I didn't start it. It's not like everyone hasn't seen your sister already." The voices around us got quieter, but the band on stage seemed to be getting louder by the second. I didn't exactly want Joe to start a fight with Belle, but the realization that a group of strangers were passing around a phone with my naked body on the screen and talking about it less than 5 feet away from me was sinking in fast. I started sweating, and the air felt a little too thick. Everyone was starting to home in on me and realize what was happening. Between the whispers of the crowd and Belle's faux innocent face, I wanted to scream. "What's your problem, Belle? Who the fuck do you think you are, digging that shit up and passing it around?" Joe waved her hands at the group of Belle's friends. Belle didn't seem to know what to say to that. "Oh my God," I heard someone say from somewhere behind Belle, and then Shia was there. I felt immediate betrayal. Of course he was in on it. How else would Belle even know there were pictures of me in the first place? "What's going on?" Joe responded, "Your fucking girlfriend is passing this around." Joe snatched the phone out of Shelly Hunchberg's hands and shoved it into Shia's face. He barely looked at the phone before he backed away from Belle. "The rest of you can go away now," Joe shouted, waving her hand like she was swatting flies. Beth looped her arm through mine, and Lori stood behind Joe with a pissed-off look on his face. I hoped he would punch Shia right in the damn throat. Sadly, he didn't. "What are you doing?" Shia asked Belle. She fidgeted a little, pulled the thin strap of her tank top up her shoulder. She looked a little less put together and a lot more worried, and I was trying to fight the burn of tears in the back of my throat. I couldn't cry in front of these assholes, especially not Shia and his bride-to-be.
"We were just joking around."
Belle's voice was soft.
"It's not a fucking joke," Joe shouted.
I knew I looked pathetic letting my little sister fight my battles, but I was frozen in place and stunned into silence.
"Whose phone is this?"
Shia held it in the air. Shelly Hunchberg raised her hand and stepped forward.
"Really, Shelly?" Beth snapped. "Let's go, Meg."
She pulled at my arm.
When I thought about it, there wasn't much I could do.
I could either stand there and be humiliated as Belle act like it wasn't a big deal that an entire group of people were mocking me and looking at my body, or I could leave. I grabbed Beth's jewelry bag from the ground and turned to leave. I didn't even look at Shia. A woman with a baby strapped to her chest bumped into me, and her baby started to scream. It felt like a sign from the universe, a big, shiny fuck you from the universe. I heard Joe still yelling, and I heard Shia's voice calling my name as Beth dragged me through the crowd. All of the faces around me looked like River, like Belle, like Jessica Fox, who was supposed to be my best friend in Texas, but taped a printed version of one of the pictures to my front door so that Amy found it when she came home on the bus. I remembered the look on my dad's face when he got back from talking to River's parents. My dad wanted to press charges for distributing child pornography since I wasn't 18 and River was, but I didn't want to deal with the humiliation and consequences at school. Everyone loved River, and I was just a whore who gave boys blowjobs in the back seats of their cars to make them like me more. I was the girl with the big tits and the horny mouth. I got it. I sent pictures to my boyfriend and was going to be shamed to the ends of the halls of Killeen High School for it. Well, apparently, I was going to be shamed on the streets of New Orleans, too. When we neared the street, I remembered the fury that had radiated through Meredith when she stormed through the halls of my high school, demanding that every computer be wiped clean. I remembered the day I walked into the computer lab and Jessica Fox had set my boobs as the wallpaper on half of the monitors. The air in my lungs was burning, and I was out of breath. I stopped for a second. Beth looked at my face and said, "Let's stop for a minute." "Hey," a girl's voice called to us from behind a booth. "Shia's coming," Beth told me and waved to the girl behind the booth. "Get me out of here," I begged Beth. I didn't want to see Shia, and I only had about 30 seconds before the tears were going to be unstoppable. I was so mad, so fucking pissed at myself and the world for being so stupid. I should never have told Shia about those stupid pictures. "Are you okay?" the girl in the booth asked. Looking over, I saw she was like some manga gypsy princess, rivaling Vanessa Hudgens for Coachella Queen. Her body was dripping with jewelry, and I realized the booth was full of the rings that Beth had bought. Beth was talking to the girl, and I couldn't hear what they were saying, but Beth told me to come behind the booth and sit down. The moment my butt hit the chair, I let myself cry. Shia walked on by without seeing us. When we got home, Amy and my dad were sitting on the couch. Meredith was in the kitchen heating up a covered dish. We would never have to cook again, it seemed.
"How was it?" Amy asked. "It looks so cool online. How was it?"
I looked at Beth.
"It was fine," she lied for me.
I loved her for it. She pulled open her bag from the jewelry booth and distracted Amy with shiny mood rings.
"I'm going to take a shower," I announced to a room full of people who all said, "Okay," to me like they didn't know why I was telling them in the first place. I made it up to my room and collapsed onto my bed. I felt like a bucket of pig's blood had been dumped on my prom dress. I felt so dirty.
38. Beth. The morning after the festival, I woke to Joe's and Meg's loud voices down the hall. Ever since Joe was a kid, whenever she got angry, her tone went a few octaves deeper. Meg was the opposite. Her usually soft voice became a screechy kind of noise, a lot like the sound of Mrs. King's little dogs.
"You could have told me," Meg yelled at her. "Weeks have gone by and nothing."
I threw my leg over the bed to get up, to go mediate whatever the hell was going on with my sisters. I was always the mediator. I was so tired, though. The festival noises, smells, chaos, it was exhausting. My entire body, mind included, throbbed when I lay in bed last night. Still, no matter how tired I was that morning, it wasn't that important. Not as important as whatever was happening down the hall.
"Don't blame me. You're always the victim," Joe yelled back.
I closed my eyes for a second and stared at the ceiling. Nothing would change in the next few seconds. The day before had started so differently than it had ended. When it started, I was anxious, sure, but it was nothing compared to the end of the night, walking Meg through a crowd, hiding her in the mood ring girls' booth. I couldn't hear what Joe and Meg were yelling about anymore. I lifted my hand into the air, studying the stone on my finger, which had turned a light blue. The lighter shades of blue were supposed to indicate that I was relaxed. I wasn't sure that I believed mood rings really worked. A door slammed, and Meg continued to yell. I got out of bed and followed the noise. In the kitchen, Meg was crying, leaning her shoulders against the fridge. Joe was gone, and the back screen door was swinging open. My dad wheeled himself into the kitchen.
"What's going on?"
he asked Meg, who didn't answer. She only cried out, covered her face, and ran off to her room. My dad and I both stared at the now-empty hallway for a few seconds before he said,
"What is happening around here?"
I didn't know what to say because I didn't know either, and I didn't know how much of last night my dad was even aware of. He had so much going on already himself, it was selfish to add another rock to his shoulders. "I don't know," I said. "I'm sure they'll work it out, whatever it is." I looked at him. "Want some breakfast?" My dad looked at me, at the door, and then down the hallway slowly. He sighed, his thin shoulders visibly dredging up and right back down. He was wearing a gray t-shirt with a small hole in the collar. His outfits never varied much, just different colored t-shirts and sweatshirts. Sometimes he would wear a button-up shirt when we went to restaurants or my sister's school functions. And even more rarely, he would dress in his class A's when there was a military ball or ceremony of whatever sort. I always loved when there was a military ball for my parents to go to. Meg had done Mom's hair and makeup for the last few years, and she would always take us to the mall and let us help her choose a dress to wear. That was one of the few times a year we got to shop at the mall. It was pretty fun helping my mom try on dresses. Somehow, the JCPenney's dressing room would become the set of Say Yes to the Dress. Meg would have Mom twirl and turn and bend down and stretch up, showing off every inch of the dresses. We would always go to Fridays for lunch, and sometimes even to Starbucks beforehand. My dad would get my mom a corsage, and Amy would make kissing noises when he slid it onto her wrist. Mom always poked his chest with a boutonniere pin due to his habit of making her laugh at the worst times. The memories I have of them are mostly fond, but sometimes it's hard to square up the dad and my memories with a man sitting in the wheelchair before me. I checked the cabinets and fridge to see what I could make for him. His appetite had changed since coming home. He says the cocktail of medications the army put him on made him too nauseous to eat.
"What was all that noise?"
my mom croaked, walking into the room. She slid behind my dad's chair and sat down at the kitchen table. The table was the oldest thing in our house, given to us by my Nana before she and my mom stopped talking. I wondered if Aunt Hannah talked to her still. I couldn't be sure, no matter how much intel I had on the adult stuff around us. The table was scratched, beat up, and broken during our PCS from Fort Hood to Fort Cypress, and my mom's elbow was resting right in the deep splinter of the glossy dark wood. She looked like she hadn't slept in days, even though she just woke up. She had been watching the Twilight Zone on the couch, a cup in her hand, when I got up to pee in the middle of the night.
Meg and Joe were fighting over something,
my dad answered. When Mom asked for specifics, I shrugged and popped open a can of biscuits and started making everyone's meal. Several minutes later, Meg came back into the kitchen, right as I handed my mom her plate. Meg was calmer now, if a bit disheveled. Want some? I asked. She nodded, and her puffy red eyes focused on my mom, who was swallowing the pile of biscuits and gravy on her plate and washing them down with milk. A faint white milk stain colored her bottom lip as she chewed. I wasn't sure what she was looking at, but something on the wall behind me seemed to be entertaining to her.
Did anyone call for me?
Meg's voice sounded like she had been chewing on sandpaper in her room.
Call what?
My dad said. I hadn't heard Meg or anyone ask that question in years. Wouldn't someone have just called her cell phone? Meg blinked and mumbled. Never mind.
What are you girls up to today?
My dad asked between bites. Clearly, neither he nor my mom were eager to get into whatever all the yelling had been about. When Meg remained silent, I guessed she wasn't going to answer, so I did. I'm doing nothing. Some school stuff, laundry. That's it, really. I shrugged.
That sounds like a blast, Beth.
It was a comfort that my dad still had his sarcasm. His tone wasn't as malicious or as callous as the comment would have sounded coming from, say, Amy, and it came with a smile and knowing about his high school experience. He was a lot like me.
Don't you have any friends around here?
He asked. You gave me so many sisters, I don't need friends. We both laughed. His laughter was a little lighter than usual, but it still sounded so good in that yellow wallpapered kitchen.
Touché.
Joe didn't come back yet? Meg asked. She hadn't eaten much of the food in front of her. I thought about soaking the dishes before I made myself a plate so the slimy gravy wouldn't stick to the pan. But I was so hungry, and the gravy looked so, so good. My dad answered,
No, she's still next door.
As far as I knew, no one knew for sure that Joe was at Laurie's, but then again, we all knew. That's where she always was. Laurie's, a shift at Paige's, school, then back to Laurie's. None of you were going to tell me that Shia came here that night. Meg pointed to my mom. My mom snapped her head up, but my sister kept going. He told me you all knew. He showed up there, and I didn't even know he was looking for me. Well, Meg, what difference would it have made? Mom said, then went back to eating. She didn't seem to notice the stain of gravy oiling up her shirt. Meg's eyes bulged. She wiped her mouth with a napkin before she spoke. He came looking for me, and I didn't even know. It felt like her anger was going to make the house rattle. I've been waiting for so long for him to do that, and you guys didn't even tell me. He's getting married. Would that have changed? And John Brooke? Mom pointed out. Part of me wanted to step in, but another part of me didn't know what kind of tornado I'd be walking into. I would never find out what Meg was going to say because Amy came rushing through the back door with puffy, wet eyes.
What's wrong?
My dad asked. And I watched him struggle to get up, like his legs forgot they couldn't quite move yet. He sank back down in the chair.
My life! Everything sucks!
She stormed past us and twirled around when no one tried to stop her.
Fuck everything!
Her cussing had my mom on her feet. Amy, watch your mouth! Amy huffed at our mom's warning and started to cry again.
Jacob Weber told Casey Miller that I tried to kiss him, and now everyone hates me.
She paced around the room in a fury. I didn't know who either of those kids were, but I knew how rumors could eat at someone and ruin lives. I'd watched it happen with Meg in Texas.
Why did he do that?
Meg asked Amy. My two sisters' heart-shaped faces had never looked as similar as they did in that kitchen, all puffy-eyed and pink-lipped.
Because he's a dickhead!
Amy's voice turned into a cry like a puppy's when you step on its tail. Mom didn't correct her language this time.
He was the one who tried to kiss me.
Our dad didn't say anything. He just looked at the women in the room as they started fluttering around Amy.
Are you saying you didn't want him to?
Mom asked, on her feet and sharp-eyed in seconds. It was like she'd just shed a thick, groggy layer of skin.
Where were you?
Meg petted Amy's hair like she forgot she was mid-fight with Joe. Amy leaned into her.
Ew, of course I didn't want him to. He's kissed like every girl in my class.
Amy's little nose turned up at the tip and always gave the illusion that she was younger than a preteen.
Tell us what happened.
My mom slid her hand behind Amy's back, but Amy pulled away.
Meg,
Amy whined.
My sisters shared a look, and Meg told us that they were going to talk alone for a minute.
My mom, my dad, and I all had our heads tilted a little, and I guessed that my parents were wondering when Meg and Amy had gotten so close. But I often caught them whispering, and knew how often Amy crawled in bed with Meg, so I wasn't surprised by that. My head was tilted because Meg only cared about Amy right then, not herself.
39. Joe. Lori's room was a mess. It always had some type of chaos sprinkled around. A t-shirt hanging over the side of the headboard, or a day-old decaf coffee sitting in a chipped mug on his desk. But today, it was an absolute mess. An old food odor and a musty smell that I'd rather not think about describing dominated the space. What the hell happened in here? I asked him, kicking my way through a pile of clothes. He was pacing around the bedroom like a madman. His long hair was hanging down, curling at the ends the way I liked. He looked like someone out of a novel, the stereotypical New York writer born in Boston or somewhere big. Not quite as big as the juicy red Big Apple, but bigger than this little bubble of a town. Lori, with his long golden hair, dressed in an oversized sweatshirt with patches on the elbows. He looked so smart, like he would write essays about climate or gun control. But still take your virginity after driving for hours to bring you to a field of flowers you tumblered a picture of once. His forehead was creased with a deep crinkle that made him look a little like old Mr. Lawrence, and like his dad from the array of pictures hanging in this big house.
Hey, he said, not explaining the mess. How's it going?
He lifted up a stack of magazines and put them back down on the desk. Shitty, actually. He continued rummaging through his messy bedroom and moved toward the window, through which the sun poured, paling the walls and his skin. When I took off my cardigan and draped it over the back of his chair, he looked up at me. So, Meg is pissed off because I never told her that Shia came looking for her back when she was in New Orleans with John Brooke, months ago, the day my dad was hurt? Lori was listening. I could tell, but he was still moving around the room. It was making me restless, so I kept talking. It's just that when those assholes were talking about her yesterday, she's blaming me because she won't say shit to Shia or Belle. I sat down on the bed. Lori sat down next to me.
And this is your fault, how?
He always took my side in everything. I liked that. He would debate me after if he didn't agree, but his initial reaction was always to take my side. Exactly. She's always the victim. I get that she's pissed about what happened at the festival. I'm pissed too. I was mad. I didn't want my sister to be harassed by a bunch of dicks who peaked in high school. But she was acting like it was my fault when I wasn't the character assassin here. I picked at the hole in the knee of my jeans. It's like she thinks Shia coming to the house would have changed things.
It would have, I think.
Lori paused when I gave him a look. He lifted his hands up, covered by the long sleeves of his sweatshirt.
Hear me out. He came to the house, then went to the quarter, right? I nodded. If Meg likes Shia the way Shia likes her, then it was probably pretty important for her to hear what he had to say. But they did talk, eventually. I shook my head at Lori. Besides, he's engaged. You always see everything in black and white, Joe. Sometimes there's some gray in there. I sighed. Engaged isn't really a gray area. Either you're going to marry someone soon, or not. Either you're dating someone, or you're not. Lori looked directly into my eyes. My chest tightened, and I pulled at the strings of ripped denim. Yes, and no. Sometimes it's more complicated than that. Like with us. I looked away from his eyes, down to where his hand stretched his sweatshirt, down his fitted sweatpants and clean white socks, to the floor of the dirty bedroom. This isn't about us, I said. When will it be? You know my mom wants me to come back home. I felt his words wrap around my throat and squeeze a little. Home wasn't across town or across the United States. Home was across the ocean. No, I didn't know that. She does. His eyes were trying to keep hold of mine, but I avoided them. Why can't we just talk about it? I thought we would by now. You'll be applying to colleges soon. What then? Why was he choosing this exact moment to bring this up? Wasn't there supposed to be some tiptoeing around the subject? A couple more makeouts? Meg never explained this to me. By the time she and I were starting to grow closer, my dad came back, and she stopped talking to me about things. We weren't close anymore. It was almost like we never were. Joe, Lori urged me. I looked up at him, and he moved a little closer to me. The big room felt so small, and Lori's fingers were pulling at his sleeves. If you don't want to, fine, just tell me. I'm not going to force you. I just want to know what you're thinking. I never know what you're thinking. Yes, you do. Not about me. About everything else, yes, but never about me. You talk. I don't know what you want to say or want me to say. You talk. It was true. I didn't know where to begin or end this conversation. Fine. Lori rolled his eyes. He tucked his hair behind his ears and licked his lips. Do you want to date me? Is that how this goes? Stop being sarcastic. I'm serious. His voice sounded small. I took a second to think before I spoke, something I knew I needed to do more often. Sorry. I don't know how to be serious during this. I've never done this before, remember? He jerked his shoulders back. Ouch. I quickly raised my hands. No, not what I meant. I wasn't insinuating that you have. I just meant that I literally haven't. I paused for a second. Like, ever. If it's that uncomfortable for you. No, it's not. I moved toward him when he backed farther onto the bed. Just talk. Say stuff, and then I'll say stuff. I was losing my breath. Just go first. I bit into my lip a little too hard, and I caught Lori's black eyes on my mouth just before he looked away. Okay. He dragged a long sigh through his lips. My mom's been asking if I want to come back home. My dad got orders to stay in Korea longer, and she misses me now that my sister has friends. I kept my mouth quiet while my head spun. The only reason I would stay here is if you're going to be around. I'm not saying that we have to agree to get married or move in or anything anytime soon. Just that you'll be around. I would be around. My voice was practically a whisper. What about New York? Well, yeah, I would be in New York. Lori's whole upper body sighed. Yeah, so I would be here in Louisiana, and you would be in New York City? I nodded. We would talk every day and come visit each other. People did it all the time. right? So, a long-distance relationship, then?
He didn't sound particularly excited about this idea. I honestly wasn't expecting him to want a commitment type of thing with me. I thought we would stay friends. Close. Best friends. And maybe date someday when I was out of school and his dad was home and my dad was better and I had time to worry about boys and matching bras and panties. I guess so. People do it all the time. I shrugged. We would visit on the weekends?
It's a 3-hour flight, not to mention the cost of flights, and the drive is 20 hours nonstop.
He had done his research. So what do we do? I asked. Lori shook his head, and I thought about the first time I met him. And the time when I slid down the driveway and flipped him off. The time outside the community center with Meg and Reader. Lori seemed so mysterious then, the classic heartbreaker. He was so much different in my eyes now.
He was my best friend.
I liked him more than that. I knew I did. But it also scared me. I didn't want to be like Meg when River fucked her over. I wanted to go into my first relationship with my eyes open.
Do you 100% want to go to New York? Vice has offices all over. One in Venice Beach, basically LA, one in Toronto. All over.
I want to go to New York, I think. I'd never thought about Los Angeles. Toronto, yeah, but realistically, it was hard to go outside the country for school. You could come to New York.
Could I?
Yeah? Right? I mean, why not? What are you doing here that you couldn't do there? He leaned back against his palms on the bed.
I don't know, but I don't want to live in New York. I hated staying there for longer than a few days. You haven't been. It's not as great as you think.
Yet. I will be going soon, I told him, even though my parents still hadn't given me a clear answer if we could take a tour of a few campuses there. My grades were good, but I wasn't guaranteed to get into any of the colleges I wanted. Even after getting in, I still had to worry about paying for it, and my dad's GI Bill money could only go to one of us. It had never been discussed which one of us, though. I think the long-distance thing would be fine, I told Lori. If I go to New York and hate it, we can figure it out then.
So, what if I go back to Italy? I've got a friend in Milan I could crash with for a while. I would be closer to my mom, but still only a flight from you.
He really did his research, almost too much. So you've been planning this?
Not planning, really.
He scratched at something on his forehead.
Just thinking about it. Haven't you thought about it?
Yeah, I mean, a little. I didn't really think about it too much, but I kind of just thought you would stay here and I would go to New York and come home for holidays and stuff.
I don't know. What about boys in college? And the distance would probably eat at us. It usually does.
Lori sounded like he was digging for reasons for this to fail. What I wanted to say was that statistically, the person you're dating when young isn't who you end up with when you're older. Out of all the married couples I knew, grown-ups included, most of them were on their second marriage. Lori was a part of me, and I knew it would rip out chunks of me when this stopped working. It wasn't an easy pill to swallow, but it was reality. I'm not concerned about boys in college, I said. He smiled at me and reached for my hands. His skin was always so warm. He lifted my palm in front of his face and spread my fingers out, pressing them gently to his mouth, and I shivered all over. It was something, the way he made me feel. The way he made the blood roar behind my ears and popcorn pop in my stomach. I leaned into him, and he pulled me onto his lap. Each time we were alone, we crossed another line. Made another move toward the dream of what we could be.
We are so good as neighbors.
Nearby each other, he said, inches from my face. My thighs were on either side of his lean waist. His thick sweatshirt was all droopy between us. God, he made my head fuzzy. It pissed me off.
Are you sure you want this? You won't be able to have Shelley Hunchberg come over and talk about fundraisers when I'm in another state. Oh, shut up.
He smiled. His warm hands were on my back. I could feel the heat of them through my thin tank top.
You will be the one falling in love with coffee boys and professors.